one of the toilets in my house is like right by the wall. This weather, this freezing weather,
So cold. So cold.
it froze the pipes on this toilet so that the freaking tank isn't filling that one toilet. Thankfully, I have two other toilets, but that one doesn't work because of the frozen pipes.
All right, first of all, the two other toilets thing, that's a little braggy. And number two, I got the same fucking issue. My dishwasher,
Oh.
I can't, no water's coming in the dishwasher because like the inner coil wrapped. I don't fucking know. Here's an idea. Here's an idea. I'll let you shit in my house if I can use your dishwasher.
Done. Welcome back to Low Rollers, currently ranking as the number one most popular podcast in the world. At least that's what we're claiming on Facebook now that there's no fact checking. I'm Eric Raskin. I am joined by Jeff Edelstein. We are writers for CasinoReports.com and LotteryGeeks.com. We used to be writers and podcasters somewhere else, but there's a non-disparagement clause. So that's all I have to say about that. Let's focus on this job and this pod. Please subscribe. Give us a five-star rating. So before we go any further, I do need to know, am I podcasting today with Innie Jeff or Outie Jeff?
Yeah, no, it's Outie. I wonder if I would. The idea of it is kind of interesting. I guess the problem is like
it,
if you're
it being
Innie,
severance in case anyone doesn't know what Innie and Outie mean. Right. Yes.
I mean, I guess like we're seeing the issue of being an Innie is that like you that's, you know, I don't know.
Right.
You become your own person, obviously, you know, and like
right.
it's a problem. But there are days I'd like to be able to turn it on and off. That would be pretty fun.
Right. Purely for like it's not a bad deal for the Outie, whether you're trying to escape something or whatever. The idea
right.
of that part of you never has to think about work. That's kind of cool.
Right.
But it's not very nice to the Innie.
Yeah. But like sometimes like if you're like, oh, I don't know. Hey, can you like write a story about this, like, you know, revenue report out of this state?
Right.
I'd like to go Innie at that point.
Okay. But
you
know? Outie Jeff is the podcasting side at least. Cause this taps into some things you actually enjoy doing.
Yeah. I'm Outie. I'm 100% Outie on the pod.
Okay, good.
If you're not watching Severance, by the way, just please start watching Severance.
Yes.
It's just so much fun. Such a puzzle box of a show. I to me, it's the best show like of its kind since Lost. And we could discuss the Lost ending from now until the cows come home. But like it's the, you know, if you like shows like that where like it's the show's, I guess the show's good, but it's the thinking about the show that's where
Does
the fun is.
Does The Leftovers count as this type of show? Because if so, that was in between, and I could make a case that The Leftovers... But actually, I'm more into Severance right now than I think I was ever into The Leftovers. So sure, I'll support your claim.
Yeah, The Leftovers, I did like... I'd like to rewatch The Leftovers to get a sense of how much I liked it. But I felt like it was a little bit more about the people, necessarily, whereas I still think, like, at the end of the day, Lost is about the mystery.
Another mystery show that has come in between, this is a clear one, is that Severance is vaguely reminiscent of Westworld, but if Westworld was done right.
Westworld was a disaster. I
right.
loved Westworld. And
right.
like I loved the I, even I loved the disaster of
Oh,
Westworld.
See, I gave up at a certain point. The disaster was too much for me. But some similar conceptual overlaps, but done by people who seem to have a grip on what they're doing and how to do it well.
Yes.
All right, enough TV talk.
I mean, I could talk TV all day long. You realize that, but we'll stop. Coming up, we got an interview with Chris Gerlacher from PredictionNews.com. We're going to talk about prediction markets, which are like the hottest thing going right now. But first, before we get to that, as always, Eric, plenty of news to discuss.
Yeah, and we have a lot of options for a top story this week. Basically, every state in the nation has introduced some kind of gambling legislation in the past few days. We can't possibly cover it all. I guess the most discussion-worthy piece of legislation is the one filed in Massachusetts. It was filed by State Senator John Kenan, but basically written, it would seem, by Harry Levant. It seeks to tear up the existing sports betting laws in the state. The tax rate would go up from 20% to 51%. There would be no in-game betting or prop betting. There would be affordability checks before you could place large wagers, no gambling ads during sporting events, and no bonuses or odds boosts. I really enjoyed your column on this, Jeff, including the SNL sketch you embedded that I'd never seen. I also enjoyed watching you rant about this on the Bostonian versus the Book yesterday. So you've ranted plenty, but rant some more, and then I'll rant some too, because I mostly feel the same as you.
Yeah, you know, one thing I haven't touched on here, and that does annoy the shit out of me, is Levant, whatever, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. Listen, this is a guy who got in deep, deep, deep trouble with sports betting, you know, some years ago, ruined his career as a lawyer, you know, was suicidal. Horrible story. It's a horrible story, right? And you never want to see that. You never want to wish it. But, like, that's not the person that should be leading the charge for, you know, whatever we want to call responsible gambling. You follow what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You know, like, you know, what's that math concept where you get rid of the highest and the lowest? You know, mean, median, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He has a very, 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 very strong viewpoint on this, and it's not realistic. I mean, this bill and the Safe Bet Act would just completely destroy, you know, what legalized sports betting is in America. There's a billion and one ways to talk about this. So the only thing about the bill that I kind of like that doesn't bother me is the idea of an advertising ban during sporting events.
Right.
Don't hate that, you know, because I also like, I mentioned this on the Bostonian versus the Book, and I never thought about beer ads until I started having kids. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there watching the game with my son, and every other commercial is for Budweiser, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, is this really, do we need to do this? Do we, you know, if you, I mean, I'm an adult. If I want to drink, which I do virtually all the time, I know like where to buy it. I don't need there's no alcohol advertising is going to make me drink at this point. And so like, who's the alcohol advertising geared at? It's geared at people who don't yet drink, i.e. children. Like, I don't know, like, how do we not see this? So my point here is I'm not big into Big Brother, blah, blah, blah. But like, listen, I could see the argument where we get rid of like sports betting advertising. I think we should get rid of beer advertising during sporting events too. It just seems logical to me. So that, okay, I can get behind. Everything else is fucking crazy. Just fucking crazy.
I'd like to get rid of all advertising during all events, especially if it's a streaming service that I'm paying for and still they're slipping in ads. That really pisses me off. But I think you're right that's one part of the bill that you can see the point behind it. The other thing in the bill that I kind of agree with him on, and not that it should be banned, but I'll just agree that it is a more addictive product, is in-game betting. And, you know, not so much betting on the outcome in the middle of the game, but more the micro betting, next play, betting on every pitch or every snap. I don't believe it needs to be banned, but I do think maybe it's a good idea to cap the size of those bets at some percentage of what a player's standard pregame unit bet is, because, you know, it's like online slots in that you can hit spin just like over and over too fast. But your point about Levant, I sympathize with him. I respect that he had a gambling problem and it nearly ruined his life. There are ways to channel that into constructively crusading for safer gambling. He's channeling it into, I couldn't handle gambling, so let's police it as if everyone has the same disease I have. And that's what really bothers me about all this.
And you know what, now that we're talking about it, and you know, this, it's not on our rundown, it probably should have been, was the Keith White departure from the and National Council on Problem Gambling.
Right.
You know, White has been, you know, a moderating voice in this discussion, you know, from the jump.
Right.
And with him no longer there, there's concern that the NCPG, that the NCPG is going to lose like pretty much any credibility that it, I mean, it seems like the credibility that organization carried was White, that he was the credibility. And he was a moderating voice when he took a neutral position on gambling. Now, if the loudest voice in the room is going to be Levant, whatever, and that crew, that's not good. You know, that's not good, because this is not banning prop bets. Give me a break. Affordability checks. Give me a break. You know, they say that if I want to like bet, I have to show my bank account,
right,
and it can't be more than 15%. As I bring up in my thing, I'm not a rich man. But I know not to keep all my money in a 0% checking account.
Right.
Like, things like that are just, I don't like it. And the affordability checks on just the level are terrible. Because, again, is there affordability checks for people that collect Jordan sneakers, right? Are there affordability checks for how many streaming services, you know, I subscribe to? You know, don't do that. That is ridiculous.
For every other product, the affordability check is, are you able to pay for it with the money that's in whatever account you're using? And if you aren't, if you can't afford it, then you're going into debt doing it or whatever. But and so, you know, maybe there's that just supports the case that all gambling deposits should be made through with existing money rather than on credit. You know, that's the affordability check, basically.
Right. I'd listen to that argument.
Yeah, the other thing that you included in your piece that really stood out to me is I'm so glad that you stood up for bonus bets and odds boosts, because that's where the value is. You know, that's how I've been a winning better recently, is by smartly using those to make something plus EV. And actually, this ties into what we talked about on the first episode, our shared liking of the DraftKings parlay subscription. You know, parlays are bad bets usually, but in certain situations when they're boosted enough, you can have value that exceeds the VIG. So to me, that's like, of all the ridiculous parts of this Massachusetts bill, this is the one that really shows they don't understand the first thing about what they're talking about when it comes to bonuses and odds boost, calling them deceptive. They're not deceptive. You know, pre-made parlays that are endorsed by Dave Portnoy, those are deceptive. These can actually provide value.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, and the same, you know, the same applies with, like, you know, casino play. Like, I legitimately make at minimum $5 to $6 a day with casino bonuses every single day.
Right.
If, you know, free and clear. And some, you know, sometimes it's hundreds of dollars if I get a, you know, if I catch a break, free and clear, no risk, no, you know, zero risk, you know, and we're going to take this away. How's that helping me?
Right. As long as you have the discipline, of course, then not to let it lead you to actually risk money. But
oh no, I don't have that discipline at all. But the point is, but if I did have the discipline, then I'd be, you know, no, I actually do. And the way I look at it, I use it as like my like daily little DFS bankroll.
Oh,
you know,
there you go.
Make
right.
$5-$10, and now I could have $5-$10 to play to lose a DFS.
Yeah, perfect. All right, this is obviously a story that I don't think is going away, even though we all agree that this bill in its current form is going nowhere. That but as you've said, that there are elements of this that could have lasting effect in various ways. So I suppose we will be continuing to track this. But for now, let's move on quickly to a few other news stories out there. Like I said, there was tons of legislation introduced this week, and we can't cover it all. But I guess the next most interesting item was a bill introduced in your home state, New Jersey, to regulate sweepstakes casinos, which, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me to try, you know, more tax revenue for the state, but there are a whole lot of conflicting interests here. What's your reaction to this one, Jeff?
Yeah, my original reaction was this was another bill that's going nowhere. And then, and I hate to do this, I'm hoping to have a story next week, but I talked to somebody who I'm not comfortable saying who I talked to yet, but I talked to someone ear to the ground in New Jersey when it comes to all this stuff. Who told me that not as dead as everyone is making it out to be. He said, I think the exact words, he goes, there's a long way to go with this, but it's not something that we should completely write off. And I guess it wouldn't surprise me. New Jersey, you know, listen, I think New Jersey has done a hell of a job overall with legalized gambling. And I think if there's a path, you know, I think what this would do, if they were able to get this across the finish line, which is, again, not nowhere near close,
right,
as I was told, but possible, right, is that I think, you know, a lot of these sweepstakes companies would have to, it would be like put up or shut up time for them. Like, are they legit? Right. And so I think, you know, I think that might be the play here, that like maybe there are like 4, 5, 6, a dozen of these companies that are on the up and up and legit and wouldn't mind, you know, waltzing into like a legal like operation like New Jersey. Right. And then they would like cease and desist the rest of them. But I don't know. But the you know, too long, didn't read, not as dead, not as dead as everyone else, including myself, thought it was. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I have no idea what the result will be, but I just know I find this fascinating to track what the result is going to be, because, yeah, I mean, every other state is either sending cease and desist or is doing nothing. New Jersey is the only one taking this approach of trying to regulate them, and if they are able to, definitely some other states are going to follow that approach. So it's a huge deal if this does go somewhere.
And it's notable that the guy Calabrese, the assemblyman who put this, he's on like the gaming tourism committee. So like he's not coming out of this from left field. So I don't know. I can't get the guy on the phone, but like as I said, somebody that I talked to who like ear to the ground on this stuff, there's something cooking there. So we'll see.
All right. Another major bill to discuss briefly, an iCasino bill has been introduced by Joe Addabbo in New York, but the governor didn't factor it into the state's budget, so I'm 99% sure it's going nowhere this year. Charlie Brown and the football, fool me three times, shame on me, whatever analogy or cliche you want to use. Jeff, do you have any analysis more useful than mine there?
Yeah, I was going with either Job or Sisyphus. Sisyphus, is that what I'm thinking of? Pushing the boulder up the hill.
I
did some back of the envelope math. Under Addabbo's bill, 30% tax rate he's talking about on these online casinos. You're talking about $1.5 billion in tax revenue. That's my back of the envelope math is what New York would be looking at here, which is a lot of money. Clearly, the governor has no interest in this. Otherwise, she would say something about it.
Right.
So this clearly isn't happening until there's a governor who's willing to lend an ear to this. I think, what else can Addabbo do? But just put the bill forward and hopes some miracle happens. But yeah, it doesn't look like this is the year. The governor didn't mention it. Plus theoretically, we're going to find out by December 31st, where these New York, downstate casinos are going to land. So, lot of movement in New York. So, yeah, it looks like another year without online casino in New York.
Yep. All right. And lastly, we do work for this other site besides Casino Reports called Lottery Geeks. And we haven't done a lottery story yet on Low Rollers. But there was a big one last weekend. Mega Millions hit on Friday, then Powerball hit on Saturday, back to back. Hadn't happened in like a year and a half. The winning Mega Millions ticket was purchased via the Jackpocket app, the biggest win ever using that courier app. So, momentous weekend in the lottery world. Any deep thoughts, Jeff, given your status as a professional lottery geek?
Not really.
It's hard to come up with deep thoughts about lottery sometimes.
It's not easy. But yeah, the Jackpocket thing is interesting. Yeah, I kind of feel like, much in the same way that, whatever we did in 1920 compared to what we did today, I think, future Americans will be like, wait a minute, you waited in line at a gas station to buy a lottery ticket?
Right.
Explain that to me. That does not compute. So, yeah, I guess, that's good. The lottery courier certainly seems to be the wave of the future. And, yeah, it doesn't hurt that they sold a $123 million or whatever it was ticket. So, yeah, good for Jackpocket, which, of course, is owned by the Kleenex, the hope-to-be Kleenex of the sports and the gambling world,
right.
DraftKings.
DraftKings, yes. And, reading your newser on this, in which you invoked the phrase back-to-back and belly-to-belly,
mm-hmm.
I've never thought of belly-to-belly, because I don't listen to the Yankees broadcasters or whatever. I'm a Philly fan, so I wasn't too familiar with that phrase. I've always thought of belly-to-belly only with regard to suplex, which also there's back-to-backs and belly-to-belly suplexes, but apparently there are other applications besides that.
Yeah, John Sterling's back-to-back and belly-to-belly, which is from some reggae song or whatever, and the belly-to-belly suplex, nobody did it better than Magnum TA.
Harley Race had a pretty good one.
He did, you're right, but I think Magnum TA, wouldn't you say, if I had to rank belly-to-bellies, I think Magnum TA is number one, no?
Sure, I haven't thought it through carefully enough, but I'm not gonna argue against Magnum TA. How's that?
World Championship Wrestling, man, inject into my veins. That was the good stuff.
All right, let's shift gears and talk some prediction markets with Chris Gerlacher. And I should note before we throw to this interview was recorded Wednesday, just before Kalshi announced it was going to post Super Bowl markets. So the topic is even more relevant now, but if you're listening and you're wondering why we don't specifically mention that development, wanted to point that out, that that's why. So let's get to our interview with Chris Gerlacher. Mainstream news and gambling world news collided this week with the swearing in of a new president who is aligned with lots of pro-crypto interests and whose son is a newly named advisor to prediction market operator Kalshi. So it seems an ideal week to drill down on the explosion in the prediction market sector. And to that end, we welcome a guest who is living and breathing this topic these days as the senior political reporter for PredictionNews.com. He has also contributed to one of our sites, Lottery Geeks. He is Chris Gerlacher. Chris, thanks for joining us on Low Rollers.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for getting my last name right.
As the listeners don't know that I did ask specifically beforehand because I wasn't sure. There could have been a Gare rather than a Gur, a Lack rather than a Lock, but now everyone knows the correct pronunciation. So there's all sorts of big picture stuff we can talk about with this rapidly expanding form of gambling, but I feel like the place to start is just with the news over the last week or so that the CFTC told Crypto.com they can't offer sports prediction markets, and Crypto.com basically flipped the CFTC the bird. Give me your take on the climate here, the political climate here, with Trump back in office. Are all these prediction market sites just going to be able to do whatever they want?
They're going to try. They're going to push it. I mean, the line between a finance company and a gambling company was pretty clear before Crypto.com. You know, it was just what you could offer markets on. I mean, Sportradar offers prediction markets, but it's only on game outcomes. It's all, you know, futures, money lines, point spreads, over-unders. But, you know, another regulated site under finance like Kalshi, they don't offer sport outcomes. They offer markets on everything else, or almost everything else. We'll get to that in a minute, but you know, now that Crypto.com is trying to push into sports, they're trying to, you know, stake their claim in another really potentially profitable group of contracts that they do have some claim to. I mean, an event contract is supposed to let you hedge the economic risks against just ordinary events. So, you know, like one of Kalshi's early rainfall markets probably looks silly, but if you're in North Carolina and you bet high on, you know, whether rainfall is going to exceed 15 inches and you're in the path of a hurricane, well, if you get payouts from those contracts, that's, I mean, that functions the way insurance does, just on a smaller scale. So there is some additional use you can get from event contracts there. But, you know, I think crypto is, you know, going to force the CFTC to answer some hard questions that have been opened by allowing event contracts and allowing states to regulate sports betting, but not reconciling some of the overlapping questions yet.
Right. So you feel like if everyone had stuck to, not that elections are a non-controversial thing to allow people to bet on, but if everyone had stuck to elections and sort of these weather-related topics and all, that it's by attempting to be a sports betting company when that's already a separately regulated space, that's what you feel like is sort of creating this big stir right now.
Yeah, so ever since PASPA's overturn in 2018, sports betting has belonged to the states. So now you're going to see this, you know, conflict at the state legislative level where, you know, state legislators are probably going to notice that, you know, in New York, for example, sportsbooks pay a 51% tax rate to offer sports wagers. And, you know, Crypto.com could potentially offer their sports contracts, which give customers better prices and which, you know, is cheaper for Crypto.com to operate than it is for FanDuel to operate their sports book in New York. So I think you'll start to see some state legislators, especially the ones who have sponsored sports betting bills at the state level. I think you're going to start seeing some pressure on them to tweak some sports betting terms or you know, create some more favorable conditions now that there's potentially a new, you know, sports betting option that's better for businesses and customers.
So, you know, I'm kind of curious, you know, Eric started this, you know, the beginning of this conversation saying another form of gambling, right? Hmm. Do these companies and the people that are invested in them and the people that use them, do they look at it as gambling, or they tilt it? Do they look at it more as like just an extension of the stock market?
The answer is yes.
Which of course, horse of a different color.
Yeah, I mean, they I mean, the fight about whether derivatives are gambling goes back over 100 years, you know, back to the first agricultural futures. Are you just going to gamble on the price of wheat, or are you offering a hedging tool that, wheat producers and farmers who, like an insurance policy is never going to cover the entire, farming process from, growing the wheat and hoping the harvest is good to the various transportation steps, all the way to the final delivery of the wheat sale. I mean, there are so many things that can go wrong in that supply chain that you can't, cleanly capture in an actual, like in an actuarial table at an insurance company. So, they would, I mean, the finance industry would probably say, yes, there's gambling, there's speculation on the site, in these markets, but they also offer this useful hedging function, and prediction markets offer, the additional benefit of forecasting. So if you think that, Donald Trump has a 60% chance of winning the election, as, Cauchy and Polymarket did, just weeks before the 2024 election, that's another piece of information you can get even if you're not active in the markets themselves, even if you're not a trader. So yes, there's, gambling activity in there, but there are additional layers of benefit that are absent from, traditional sports books, for example.
Another thing you mentioned earlier was the idea that some of these sports betting companies are going to go to their state legislatures and be like, "Hey, man, this ain't cool. We want better terms." I've been covering different aspects of the world for the last 25 odd years. One thing I don't think I've ever seen is tax rates go down.
Right.
So I don't see a world in which state legislatures are going to be like, "Yeah, let's lower taxes." If anything, I think they're going to seek to either raise, start taxing. As legalities work their way through the courts, taxing these companies, right, at the same rate as they're taxing the sports betting companies, or using whatever legislative power they have to try to keep them out, and we're seeing that like play out in like the sweepstakes world with a lot of states, trying to send out cease and desist letters and the things of that nature. I mean, do you see a world in which these companies kind of like agree to some kind of like tax rate, or would you ever see it as a state by state issue, or is this just going to be decided at the national level?
Well, this is finance, and this is the CFTC. So the states don't have, I mean, there's no viable path for for the state legislators to get a cut of whatever crypto.com is doing in their state, which has, really made some gambling regulators mad. I know, Washington State, had some angry gambling regulators, who were unhappy that Cauchy was able to offer its election contracts in their state, even though, they, among, many other states, ban election betting on paper. And this is something that's unique to finance. In finance, you can have the same transaction done under different regulatory structures. So if you want to trade, gold, you can trade it as a commodity. That's a transaction that the CFTC would regulate. You could trade a exchange traded fund, and but there's also an SEC regulated option to do a similar cult transaction. So you have these different markets for the identical transactions in finance, and you don't really have that in gambling. So I think the way you view this is really going to depend whether you're viewing it from the gambling industry, where there is one set of rules that you're trying to enforce, and whether you're coming from finance, where you have multiple transactions under multiple regulatory frameworks that are all legal and sometimes overlap, and it's just accepted.
All right, so since we're talking prediction markets, what's your prediction? Where, when we look up in 5 years from now, what does the landscape look like?
I think we have several regulated prediction markets. I think Kalshi is going to have a very good 4 years. This will be a good 4 years for alternative institutions in general. So crypto will have a good year that prediction markets will ride. A lot of new prediction markets that are founded in the crypto space get founded on the Solana blockchain. So any crypto regulation is also going to, indirectly benefit at least some prediction markets. One of the big things that happened for prediction markets was mainstream media accepted prediction markets as a serious data point, in addition to polls. So I think when we get to 2028, and we'll probably even see this in 26 during the midterms, I think you're going to see more prediction market prices quoted alongside, expert panels and traditional polls as well. They've become bigger. Prediction markets, especially election markets, have become, increasingly popular and more have garnered more attention In every election since at least 2016 for sure, and maybe even 2012, but 2024 was a really, really big breakout year. So I think they're gonna be treated a lot more seriously in this in the next presidential cycle.
I'm curious, two quick things on your involvement in prediction markets. First, as a journalist, just how interesting are you finding it the day to day of tracking the prices and the markets? Is it proving to be a compelling beat for you to cover?
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's so many markets on so many different headlines, and it's just another way to, one, look at the future for markets that are built for that, and two, you can also just get a really good state of play. And even saw this, and this, by the way, will be one of the big, whenever the CFTC is in a regulatory mood again, this is the question, one of the questions they'll have to answer. After the election, you saw this split between, really entertainment focused markets and, kind of the more serious, more forecasting ones. So, something like the election where there is a ton of public information out there, and all of that public information can be interpreted, in a million different ways. No two people could agree on what one piece of information meant about whether, Kamala Harris would win or whether Donald Trump would win in October 2024. So that's the kind of, really useful forecasting tool where you get a market that brings all of those, disagreeable interpretations together into one number and really get a good overview. And then you had stuff like the Trump cabinet markets where you saw markets reacting to whatever, whoever Donald Trump was going to put forward. So like Pete Hegseth came out of nowhere when he was first nominated for Secretary of Defense. And, you saw that, reflected in the prices. We have a funny screenshot of, the two former front runners just plummeting, and then a little squiggle up the top where Hegseth was just added a minute ago. But that's where, those prediction markets will give you an accurate state of play, but there's not a lot of public information about what's going on in Trump's head in insider decision like that. So seeing the difference between those markets has been really interesting, and I think it's going to be a really cool conversation to see play out at the regulatory level, once the prediction market industry has grown under this pretty, what'll probably be a pretty lax regime over the next 4 years.
And then the other aspect of for you personally of this is in covering it, are you finding yourself interested in, oh boy, that's val I'm covering this, I'm writing about this, boy, there's some obvious value there. Have you dabbled at all in making investments in any of these prediction markets?
I have, and I suck at it. One of my first ones was Wolverine Deadpool, whether their Rotten Tomatoes score. I bet it would come out at 80, and it settled at 79. No box
Bad
that.
beat.
Yeah, and then I put money on Harris to win, and that went poorly. So I'm struggling. I'm not, I mean, as a journalist, I prefer looking backward anyway. I like to read about what happened. Like when Bob Woodward's last book came out, I power read that in 2 days. Because there's an inside game and an outside game in politics, and the outside game is the reality show that we all recognize. It's all the stuff on Twitter. It's the late night shows. It's the news punditry. But the inside game is the interesting stuff that you usually can't get full access to until, the books come out in the summer. I get this from my dad. I'm intensely annoyed at not being an insider. So I like having the inside view, but that also, that also puts you kind of behind the curve. So there's this balance you have to have between, reporting on the reality show and what's happening, and, trying to get access to, the journalists who have some White House access who are also being fed stories. And then also looking backward and making sure you remember events correctly and using, the full information you might know from the last 6 months to, kind of get more context about what's going on today.
Well, for our purposes, you're an insider on this topic, and you know more about these prediction markets than we do, and we appreciate you sharing your insight. You can read Chris Gerlacher at predictionnews.com. Anywhere else people should go to keep up with you, a social media handle of choice or anything like that?
Sure, I'm somewhat active on Twitter. You can find me at GerlacherC on Twitter, and I write a Substack page called Applied Knowledge Book Reviews. I reply or I review a book on Mondays, and I profile a cool dissident from somewhere in the world on Wednesdays.
So you're reading a book a week in order to keep that going?
Give or take. I mean,
Wow.
I'm constantly reading. I'm
Okay.
halfway through A History of Strategy now. And I've been stuck on that for a while, but I've got some shorter books in the works that I can read through pretty quick.
Eric
Wow.
hasn't read a book since college.
This is just about true. I'm like a one book every 2 or 3 years kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I'm impressed with your the amount that you're able to consume.
Yeah, I like to scare old people by being a young person and just bringing in a book. It looks unnatural to them when I go to coffee shops.
AJ Brown got the idea from you to be reading on the sidelines, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, it's great talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Chris.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks again to Chris. So I don't have a gambling story for you this week, Jeff, but this is gambling adjacent in that it's sad seeing someone melt down over the stress of a bet, right? Like
Sure.
almost makes you want to outlaw sports betting when you see how it makes some people behave. Well, then we would probably need to outlaw sports fandom too, because my God, was I pathetic watching that Eagles Rams game last Sunday. I was miserable the entire time, just in full dread mode. So many points left on the board in the first half. It felt like the game, as a result, was always closer than it should have been. And when Stafford completed that pass to Puka right near the end, I actually felt like I was going to throw up. I almost had to run to the bathroom and throw up.
And you almost had to run to the bathroom in Puka.
You're right. Puka almost made me Puka. What is wrong with me, Jeff? I'm almost 50 years old. Why am I still like this?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. I have not been a rooting. I haven't had a rooting interest in a team since the '86 Mets. The Mets are my last. They're like my last like holdover. I still get a little like wistful with them, but not enough to like. I mean, I would not enough to like not bet $5 against them and hope they lose. You know.
But like watching the playoffs this year with the Mets making a nice run, did you have moments of like the stress wearing you down, or you're not that same kid who in the 80s lived and died with it?
No, in 1986, I was 14 years old, a freshman in high school, two outs, nobody on, you know, game six, bottom of the ninth. When I say I was like bawling, crying, I was bawling, crying, bawling, you know, inconsolable. Which you can imagine the joy that then came,
Sure.
you know, slow roller down the first base line, you know. So no, but this year, no, it was exciting. I got excited about it, but I wasn't. Let me. I'll put it to you this way. You know, when they're down like 4-0 in the third, I'm like, all right, the game's over. I'm not watching. I would turn it off. Like I wouldn't even
Huh.
bother. You know, the Dodgers series. So you know, it was the first two series were exciting, but yeah, you know, it was. I was excited, but I wasn't dying. I wasn't
Okay.
living and
Well,
dying with
you
it.
are a more evolved individual, I suppose, than I am.
Well,
In certain regards.
I think I've just been gambling longer. So that's
Maybe
what it
that's
comes
it.
down to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the Eagles, you know, have you seen this Barkley rushing prop, man?
Is it 130 and a half still, something like that?
130 and 130 and a half. Now
Wow.
listen, I understand a bunch here, right? I understand how lines are made. Yeah. I understand how lines get shaped. I understand why they move. I understand Barkley is the engine of this offense. I also understand that 130 and a half yards over a 17 game season would be 2,200 and change, right? Which would be more than 100 yards past Dickerson's record. You know, and I guess I also understand Barkley's exceeded this number 7 times this year, you know, in 16 games that he played, including twice against the Commanders. But I mean, if you're betting the over on this, you're freaking nuts, right? I mean, you're basically like literally you're effectively betting on a record-setting pace, right? Which seems to be a crazy thing to bet on. That seems insane. You know, I'm not sure what the smart bet is here, but you know, going over ain't it. You know, I was looking online DraftKings, and in 6 year history of being a sports book, said this is the highest rushing yardage prop ever at 130 and a half. Then I'm looking further and then the five highest ones before that, three of them hit. So Barkley's hit this number almost 50% of the time. 60% of the time, the over has. Okay, maybe, all right, yeah, maybe it is a smart bet. I don't know.
You talked
Maybe.
yourself into it.
I think I might have just talked myself into it. I honestly have no idea what the right move is, which is why we call ourselves the low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.